So let's talk a little bit more about Chilly Gonzalez then. He's a Canadian performer. He's a bit of a musical chameleon. And he's taken in trip-hop, rap, electronica, classical, jazz. He's collaborated with Peaches, Daft Punk, Jarvis Cocker and more. And Chilly Gonzalez also works with young up-and-coming musicians with his Gonservatory. And so tonight, Monday, he's bringing his piano music to Brighton Dome, supported by Sarah there. I spoke to Chilly on the phone at his home in Germany to ask him about that musical skittishness.
Well, my name is Chilly Gonzalez, and as you can probably guess, that's not my birth name. I'm an entertainer, and that's why I've chosen a name that I feel is entertaining. And I'm a pianist, but there's a big asterisk next to that pianist description. So I like to give a full entertainment experience, and that involves, of course, all the usual weapons, whether it's humor, melancholy of the music itself, some virtuosity, and most of all, I like to include people in my show, and specifically talking about music. So in a way, many people have said I'm the music professor that they wished they would have had when they were younger.
That's nice.
I like to let people in on how musicians think and how we approach things, and, you know, how music, whether you're a pianist or a rapper or a electronic musician, in the end, it is just music, and there's more, perhaps more in common than we'd like to admit. So that's, I guess, sort of my manifesto, and the show goes from a whisper to a scream, and I haven't played in Brighton very often, so I'm really excited.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you touched on it there, because it's fair to say you're a bit of a musical chameleon, because in your musical career, you've taken in trip-hop, rap, electronica, classical, jazz. I mean, is this really the sign of a restless mind, or is it a way of keeping things fresh, or is it a bit of both?
Well, I suppose that the common link between all of those will always be the piano for me. You hear piano in all of those styles of music, and I believe the piano has endured precisely because it's so versatile, and you know, this giant beast of a piece of furniture has persisted despite all of the technological advances. It's still there. You walk into any studio and you'll see keyboards. You know, it's the prism through which we see music. So, like I said, I'm a musical humanist. I don't really believe in musical borders. I think it's important to show that we can transcend them. You know, I even have a music school called the Gonservatory, in which I sort of bring people from each of those musical styles together and force them to kind of compose together and find that common ground. And that's sort of what I do when I find myself in front of my audience, is how do I find the common ground between these essentially random group of people who find themselves all sitting in front of me? How can I build a bridge to them musically? And I think especially in the classical and jazz world, that's become a bit of a no-go. You know, we're supposed to be very serious. There's all these rules about how you can't clap in between movements, and I definitely privilege fun. I believe you should leave the concert with a giant smile plastered on your face, and that's what I intend to do.
Too far gone, unrecognizable, frightened of the message light on the phone, on the bedside table. Where is Gilligan's Island? Where do germs come from? Don't open the curtains, I'm allergic to sun. Room 29.
You are known for your collaborations. I mean, you've worked with people like Peaches, Daft Punk, Jarvis Cocker, and you even teamed up with a French chef to create food and accompanying music. I guess working with different people like that is a great opportunity to bounce around ideas, no matter how ludicrous they might sound on paper.
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm very interested, for example, in athletes. I actually wrote an opera about the tennis player John McEnroe some years ago. I'm interested in art forms that don't really seem maybe like they're art forms to most people, like sports, the making of food. I believe these are all creative pursuits, and so definitely worthy of trying to combine with music.
How much does your location feed into your work? I mean, you're Canadian, but you've variously lived in Berlin, Cologne, Paris. Do you find that your music shifts subtly in terms of a response to where you're living?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, everything from what you ate for breakfast to the people that are in your life will influence your music. But I think perhaps there's something about being a Canadian that makes us extra special. We travel well. There's a certain inferiority complex I think, that Canadians have that makes them think, well, all the other cultures surely are better than ours, and so we travel well. We're good at adapting. So I think just being Canadian, having that sort of detachment and that sense of humor that we're known for, we're kind of caught in between you guys as our former colonial master and the Americans, which is our loud, boorish big brother. And we're sort of caught between. I think our strategy has been to just sort of self-deprecate and adapt. And so the musical chameleon could, if you just change a couple of letters, I'm a musical Canadian.
Chilly, you've won a whole stack of awards, including a Grammy. How important are awards to you, or are they just something nice to put on the mantelpiece?
Well, that's a tough one, because the Grammy came from my collaboration with Daft Punk. And so that, I suppose the Grammy is just a reminder of the prize I won by being asked to work with them in the first place. And it's a sign of their generosity that I'm included in their list of artists that meant that I got that Grammy. But I suppose if it were for my own work, if I were to win prizes for what I really truly believe I am born to do, which is to entertain, if there was a Grammy for giving the kind of concert I give, then that would probably mean more to me. And of course, it's nice to feel like you exist in the real world of institutions like the Grammys, or for example, my Guinness World Record for the longest solo concert. I did play a 27-hour concert about 10 years ago. And the idea of touching on something like the Guinness World Record book, which I perused as a child and thought, who are these crazy freaks? And then to become one of those crazy freaks myself, it's a nice moment. I did watch the Grammys as a kid, and to think that I have one currently that I'm currently staring at on the on the shelf of my bathroom. That's a wonderful thing.
Let's come on to your gig in Brighton then. So you're appearing in Brighton with Sarah McCoy. Tell us a bit about her. She's got an amazing blues voice.
Yes, yeah, I think she's sort of following in the tradition of many of these sort of like, you can't believe the voice is coming out of that person singers, like Amy Winehouse and Adele and people like that she often gets compared to. And I sort of discovered her playing a gig in Paris, and I couldn't tell how old she was or how long she'd been doing it. I didn't know if she was like an unknown legend or if she was somehow an icon that I just hadn't heard about. I was so curious to know what was behind her very strong sound, but also her very strong look. And we got along famously right away. She's a total goofball. She's from New Orleans, but she sort of reminded me of a lot of easygoing musician Canadians that I came up with. And so we worked on her album together, which just came out, I think, a few months ago, called Blood Siren. And now, of course, I take her on the road whenever I can, so people can sort of replicate that experience I had, where my jaw just hit the floor from the first second.
Your visit to Brighton is part of a massive international tour. Do you enjoy touring, or is it a bit of a necessary evil?
No, I would say recording is a necessary evil to continue touring. I am a born entertainer. I'm not a studio musician. I'm not someone who says, oh, I just like to turn on my machines and sit in my bedroom and make music. I need people in front of me. That's always how it was with my family. They were my first audience. How I find my place in society is through entertaining people and making them feel good with music. And that's why I started my music school, the Conservatory, to pass that on, because I feel like the live music experience, in one way, it's become the most important focal point for the pragmatism of how do you make a living as a musician, because as we all know, the recording side of the music business is kind of imploding. Yet at the same time, many young musicians don't really realize how important it is to get in front of people and make that connection, and they think that just to put their song on online somewhere is enough. And I don't think that's a replacement. Nothing will replace the live experience. That's what music was for thousands of years. Some guy banging on a drum in a cave to make the other one feel good. And we can never replace that. And so touring is my life. It's absolutely the most important thing I do. I'm convinced that if someone sees me live, then I've done the best I can do. Whereas the recording experience, making videos for YouTube, that's all wonderful. It's great that the music can travel through those different media, but that's never a replacement for the real thing.
Better say a long farewell.